You're listening to Comedy Central.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Daily Social Distancing Show. I'm Trevor Noah. Today is July 20th and New York has officially entered phase 4 of the reopening. Or as coronavirus calls it, back to work, baby. Now as you can see, I am still filming the show from my apartment because I'm using the TV studio to store grain. Yeah, you gotta be ready for the second wave. Anyway, on tonight's episode, Trader Joe's decolonizes itself. Kanye West drops his weirdest track yet. And although most classrooms are closed, Chris Wallace still found a way to take Trump to school. So let's do this, people. Welcome to the Daily Social Distancing Show.
From Trevor's couch in New York City to your couch somewhere in the world, this is the Daily Social Distancing Show with Trevor Noah. Ears Edition.
Let's begin today's episode with a celebration of John Lewis, the civil rights icon who died Friday at the age of 80. All weekend, people were remembering just how extraordinary this man's life was.
Civil rights icon and American hero John Lewis passing away at the age of 80.
As a college student, he helped lead the fight against racial inequality by participating in multiple protests. In 1963, he was just 23, the youngest speaker at the March on Washington, right alongside Martin Luther King Jr.
My friends, let us not forget that we are involved in a serious social revolution.
2 years later, he would lead peaceful protesters across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, fighting for the right to vote. They were met with brutal force by state troopers, Lewis bloodied and with a fractured skull. He would continue his fight as a U.S. representative, known as the Conscience of Congress.
Hundreds gathering overnight for a candlelight vigil there in Atlanta.
An outpouring of tributes for a legend, including from Barack Obama, who credited Lewis with helping to make his presidency possible, later awarding him the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2011, and now sharing these words. Not many of us get to live to see our own legacy play out in such a meaningful, remarkable way. John Lewis did.
Wow. You know you have lived quite a life when you get heartfelt tributes like that from all across the globe. And they really did come in from everywhere. Even from Republican colleagues that said, hey, this guy was an amazing human being who fought for what he believed in. Although I will say there were a few that were just a little bit off key. For instance, Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader and what mushrooms would look like if they had faces. He sent out a long statement praising Lewis's sacrifices, but at the same time, he's also been blocking the effort Lewis led to fully restore the Voting Rights Act. So it's a lot like if the Joker wrote a eulogy for Batman.
Some people tried to destroy the city he loved, or tried to poison him with laughing gas. But I'd always miss Batsy.
What? You were the one doing that. I mean, to be fair though, Mitch McConnell always sends a sweet message when a black colleague dies because it's one less person he has to keep from voting. But probably the most awkward tribute to John Lewis came from Marco Rubio, Republican senator and guy who could get away with playing Little League. On Saturday, Rubio tweeted a tribute to John Lewis, but with a photo of himself standing with a different deceased black congressman, Elijah Cummings. And I'm sorry, man, but that's just so embarrassing. I mean, this is the racial version of calling out your ex's name in bed. But I guess now I finally understand why Rubio sent me an edible arrangement on Don Lemon's birthday. I mean, it didn't make sense, but I ate that shit. And it wasn't just Rubio. Two Republican senators confused John Lewis with Elijah Cummings, which is positively insane. because they worked with the man for years. This probably explains why Republicans only have one black guy in Congress at a time. Less chance for confusion. All right, you're the House guy and you're the Senate one. All right, this works. But let's move on to a somewhat less legendary political figure. Kanye West, hip-hop superstar and Kim Kardashian's eldest child. Kanye has been promoting a new album slash presidential campaign, and it has not been going great.
Kanye West is moving forward with his campaign for president. He held a rally in Charleston, South Carolina yesterday.
Arriving on stage with the year 2020 shaved into the back of his head and wearing what appeared to be a military-style vest, West appeared to be putting forward policy proposals on the fly.
Everybody that has a baby gets $1 million or something you haven't had before.
And at one point, he broke down into tears while describing how he was nearly aborted by his parents.
There would have been no Kanye West because my dad was too busy.
One of the more controversial statements of the night, though, came when he criticized abolitionist Harriet Tubman.
Well, Harriet Tubman never actually freed the slaves. She just had the slaves go work for other white people.
Y'all, we leaving right now.
Okay, this is officially the weirdest hip-hop beef of all time. You're gonna go after Harriet Tubman for not getting the slaves better jobs? What was she supposed to do? Run the Underground Railroad and LinkedIn? I mean, I guess congratulations, though. You know, Kanye found a campaign hat that black people are even less likely to wear than Trump's. And honestly, guys, I don't know what to make of this. I genuinely don't know what to make of this. You know, but because my takeaway from this event is that Kanye West doesn't seem well. Like, I feel like someone who cares about him needs to take his microphone away. Although, ironically, the best person for that job is Kanye. The battle for justice in America continues every single day. But if it seems like there's no end in sight, at least there's progress on some of the smaller issues.
Trader Joe's supermarket chain is under fire. It's being urged to change some of the names of its ethnic foods.
Over 1,000 people have signed a petition urging the company to rename products labeled Trader Ming's, Trader Jose's, and Trader Jotto's. Trader Joe's says they have been in a years-long process of repackaging products and will soon complete the work.
We did it! Black Lives Matter. No justice, no peace. And also rename the pasta. But look, I get why people complained about how they were branding the foods in Trader Joe's. Like, let's be honest, you don't have to call something Trader Ming's for them to know that it's Chinese food, right? Just like you don't have to call it Trader Karen's for them to know that it has pumpkin spice in it. So I am glad that they're revamping these labels if this is what people want. And you know, if your company's over 60 years old, it's inevitable. The branding is gonna become problematic at some point. I mean, you should see what Honey Nut Cheerios looked like up until last week. Whew, they were dope. That was problematic. Now, you may be wondering, what happens to all this food after it gets canceled? Like, do they just throw it away? Because, I mean, that seems like a waste. Well, the good news is, there's actually a grocery service that gives you the food you need with all of the racial insensitivity you crave.
Are you sad because your favorite problematic brands have been canceled?
Aunt Jemima was canceled.
Then you need Bigot Basket. Bigot Basket delivers all the brands that you won't find in those PC grocery stores. Products like Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, Build-A-Walnuts, Tucker Carlson-O's, and White Chocolate. Sure, you could buy the same exact food under a different name, but you have a sophisticated palate, and you know food tastes better when it's making someone sad. And to own the libs even more, all our deliveries are packaged in those plastic rings that kill turtles. So order your Bigot Basket today. Use promo code All Lives Matter to get 10% off.
Whew, so offensive, but so delicious. All right, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll take a look at how everyone should be interviewing Donald Trump. So stick around.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Daily Social Distancing Show. So yesterday, President Trump sat down for an interview with Chris Wallace, the only reporter at Fox News who isn't trying to become the next press secretary. And you can tell that he isn't, because this was no softball interview. In fact, it was pretty much a masterclass in how not to let Trump get away with his usual bullshit. Like, you know how Trump is always bragging about how well the United States is doing with the coronavirus? Well, here's what happened when he tried that move with Chris Wallace.
I think we have one of the lowest mortality
it's
rates
not true,
in the
sir.
World.
We're going to take a look. We had 900 deaths on a single day.
We will take a look.
This week.
Ready?
You can check it out.
Could you please get me the mortality rate?
Yeah.
Kaylee's right here. I heard we had one of the lowest, maybe the lowest mortality rate anywhere in the world. Do you have the numbers, please? Because I heard we had the best mortality rate.
The case may have similarly situated countries, as Dr. Birx points out. And this is...
Number one low mortality rate. I hope you show the scenario because it shows what fake news is all about.
I don't think I'm fake news, but we'll put our stats on.
You said we had the worst mortality rate in the world,
I
and we have
you
the
had
best.
The
all right, it's a little complicated, but bear with us. We went with numbers from Johns Hopkins University, which charted the mortality rate for 20 countries hit by the virus. The U.S. ranked 7th, better than the United Kingdom, but worse than Brazil and Russia. The White House went with this chart from the European CDC, which shows Italy and Spain doing worse, but countries like Brazil and South Korea doing better. Other countries doing better, like Russia, aren't included in the White House chart.
Oh, you see? Chris Wallace did two things right there that Trump absolutely hates. He proved him wrong, and he made him do homework. And the funniest part about this to me isn't that Trump used a bullshit chart to prove that America has the best mortality rate. It's that even on a bullshit chart, it's still not true. I mean, if you just want any chart that's going to show how well you're doing, man, just go all the way with it. And that wasn't the only time Trump tried to bring receipts that he didn't actually have. Here he is attempting to prove that Joe Biden said he wants to defund the police.
They want to defund the police, and Biden wants to defund the police.
Sir, he does not.
Look, he signed a charter with Bernie Sanders. I will get that one, just like I was right on the mortality rate. Did you read the charter that he agreed to?
It says nothing about defunding the police.
Oh, really? It says abolish. It says defund. Let's go.
All right.
Give me the charter, please.
All right.
Chris, you've got to start studying for these.
He says defund the police.
He says defund the police. They talk about abolishing the police. They talk about illegal aliens pouring.
I look forward to seeing that. Sir, I'm not disagreeing with you on any of those. I'm disagreeing about defund police.
The White House never sent us evidence the Bernie Biden platform calls for defunding or abolishing police because there is none.
Oh, man. I don't care how many times I watch it. It is priceless seeing Trump flail around trying to find a fact that he made up. And it actually shows you how his brain just kind of mixes up everything he reads into one big information smoothie. Because clearly, he read that Biden wants to abolish immigration detention, and he also read that Biden wants police reform, and then his brain just mashed them up into Biden wants to abolish the police. I kind of want to give Trump a book to read, just to see how he would explain it back to me.
Green Eggs and Ham is a tragic story about two eggs that want to marry a ham. They want to get married. They love each other.
But again, another great fact check from Chris Wallace. And I gotta admit, I love Chris Wallace, the journalist. But Chris Wallace, the dad, must be a nightmare. His kids are probably coming home like, yeah, school was fine. You know, we just did a bunch of work. I just put my head down and worked.
Well, actually, I have photo evidence here of you spending all day under the bleachers vaping while making out with Samantha.
And honestly, it got to the point where Chris Wallace wasn't just fact-checking Trump, he was fact-shaming him. Because for years now, Trump has been bragging about what a good score he got on some cognitive ability test. And yesterday, Wallace flat-out told Trump that his test score ain't shit.
In the Fox poll, they asked people, who is more competent? Whose mind is sounder? Biden beats you in that.
Well, I tell you what, let's take a test. Let's take a test right now. Let's go down. Joe and I will take a test. Let him take the same test that I took.
Incidentally, I took the test, too, when I heard that you passed it.
Yeah, how did
it's
you
not
do?
The hard, well, it's not the hardest test.
No, but the
it
last...
It's a picture, and it says, what's that? And it's an elephant.
No. You see, that's all misrepresentation.
Well, that's what it was on the web.
It's all misrepresentation. Because, yes, the first few questions are easy, but I'll bet you couldn't even answer the last five questions. I'll bet you couldn't. They get very hard, the last five
well,
questions.
Well, one of them was count back from 100 by 7.
And let me tell you. You couldn't answer.
All right, what's the question?
Many of the questions. I'd get you the test. I'd like to give it. But right. I guarantee you that Joe Biden could not answer those questions.
Okay.
And I answered all 35 questions correctly.
Wow, guys. This is sort of making me sad right now. Because Trump is trying so hard to claim he's a genius because he passed a test where you have to identify an elephant. Which, let's be honest, even for Trump is too easy. I mean, if they wanted to test Trump, they shouldn't have asked him to identify an elephant. They should have asked him to identify his second daughter. Yeah, that would have been impressive.
Is it this one?
No, that's Jared, sir.
Okay. But I was close, right?
And also, counting back from 100 by 7 is super easy. Anyone can do it. It's 100. 93. 86. You don't have to be a genius. And you know what, jokes aside, I actually do feel reassured that Trump passed that cognitive test. Because someday, when terrorists threaten to kidnap the Washington Monument unless the president correctly identifies an elephant, you know Trump's got that shit handled.
It's that one. It's the rhino with the long nose.
Now, Wallace covered a lot of ground in this interview. But no matter the subject, Trump managed to make it weird. For instance, when Wallace asked Trump about army bases named after Confederate generals, this is what he said.
The National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, you have threatened to veto it because in the bill, and this is supported by Republicans as well as Democrats, it would rename army bases named for Confederate generals.
We won two world wars, beautiful world wars that were vicious and horrible, and we won them out of Fort Bragg. We want to, out of all of these forts, that now they want to throw those names away. Go to that community where Fort Bragg is in a great state. I love that state. Go to the community. Say, how do you like the idea of renaming Fort Bragg? And then what are we going to name it? You're going to name it after the Reverend Al Sharpton?
Okay, I'm sorry, what? Two beautiful world wars? This dude really can't objectify anything.
We've had two beautiful, bangable world wars. Totally tens.
That is such a dumb thing to say that they didn't even think to put something like that on the cognitive test.
Should we ask people about both world wars and see if they find them attractive or not? No, forget it. Nobody's brain is that broken. So the elephant should look like this, yeah?
Also, how insulting is it to say that people might rename the bases after Al Sharpton? Of course they should rename it after Al Sharpton. Think about how terrifying that would be for enemy soldiers.
Ah, scheiße, here comes the Al Sharpton Brigade. They're gonna call us out on our racism. We're gonna get so canceled.
This almost goes without saying, but there's a giant middle ground between naming bases after Confederate generals and naming them after Al Sharpton. I mean, America has had lots of non-Confederate generals, and Trump should know that. He's fired a lot of them. I mean, you can make any problem sound ridiculous if you pretend Al Sharpton is the only solution.
President Trump, we need universal health care.
Oh, who's gonna be your doctor? Al Sharpton?
But here's the thing. As incredible as it was to see Trump face a real interviewer, nothing Wallace says is gonna convince Trump that he's wrong about anything. Because as Trump showed, even when he is already being proven wrong, he still insists that eventually, he's gonna be right.
Dr. Fauci at the beginning said, this will pass, don't worry about it, this will pass. He was wrong.
But
right?
You made mistakes too.
I guess everybody makes mistakes.
I was gonna say, you said at one point,
I think we're gonna be very good with the coronavirus. I think that at some point, that's going to sort of just disappear, I hope. I'll be right eventually.
Well,
I will be right eventually. You know, I said, it's going to disappear. I'll say it again.
But does
it's
that
going to disappear.
Does that discredit
and
you?
I'll be right.
Eventually, I'll be right.
That's not how being right works. If you guess the wrong answer at trivia, you can't get a point by claiming that eventually one of the answers will be Marge Simpson. But that answer does expose the fundamental truth about Trump. He's much more concerned about being able to say he's right than about actually being right. If coronavirus ends up wiping out the entire planet except for Trump, he'll be standing at a podium all by himself saying,
you see, folks, it totally disappeared. I was right. much.
All right, don't go away, because after the break, I'll be speaking with former National Security Advisor and Ambassador Susan Rice. And then we'll be talking to Game of Thrones star Natalie Emmanuel. We'll be right back.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Hi, I'm David Axelrod, CNN senior political commentator, former senior advisor to President Obama, and host of the Axe Files podcast. Join me each week as I interview key figures shaping our world from politics to the arts to sports and beyond. Listen on your favorite podcast app or ask your smart speaker to play the Axe Files with David Axelrod.
Welcome back to the Daily Social Distancing Show. My first guest is Susan Rice, former National Security Advisor and UN Ambassador for President Obama. And she's also a New York Times best-selling author of the book Tough Love. We spoke about Joe Biden's vice presidential prospects and the legacy of John Lewis. Ambassador Rice, welcome to the Daily Social Distancing Show.
It's great to be with you, Trevor. Thanks.
It's a very different way to be with one another, and during this time, I've realized it's also a very different way for us to mourn the passing of people that we admired or cared about. Most recently, John Lewis. When you look at his legacy and his life and what we need to continue doing today, how far do you think we are on continuing that journey and creating that good trouble, as he called it?
Well, I hope that John Lewis's legacy will be to give us all a kick in the pants and remind us that we can be much better than we are, especially than we are today. You know, he had such warmth and such humanity and such courage, and he never quit fighting. And he knew that he was leaving us at a moment when we were being sorely tested, when there's the possibility of us finally reckoning, as he tried all his life, with our historic racial injustices and our deep-seated inequalities that are not only racial, but socioeconomic. But it's also a moment where we're struggling with a pandemic that is disproportionately affecting low-income people and people of color, immigrants. And we have leadership that literally could care less.
You were the National Security Advisor to President Obama. You were part of the pandemic response team. You were part of the people who were tasked with protecting America from a situation just like this. What plans did you have in place that the Trump administration did or didn't use, or what should have been done as somebody who was on a task force designed just to do this?
We understood, as did, frankly, prior administrations, that pandemics are inevitable. It's hard to predict exactly when they'll come, but we know they will come, and they've come repeatedly since 1918. In fact, we had, under the Obama administration in 2009, what was known as the swine flu pandemic, which was quite consequential. So we understood this could happen, so we were prepared. We left the incoming Trump administration with briefing papers and a 69-page playbook, which I like to call Pandemics for Dummies. It was, here are all the questions and considerations you should run through if and when you face this kind of crisis. We had a tabletop exercise with the entire incoming Trump cabinet and the outgoing Obama cabinet. And we sat down, and one of the scenarios we ran for them turned out to be prescient. It was of such a novel SARS-like virus emerging from China. And, you know, all of that seemed to be for naught, because a couple of years into office, President Trump dismantled the office that I set up on global health security. They trashed that playbook or stuck it in some drawer in some shelf and never pulled it out. For 2 months, January, February, and part of March, he really denied the reality of this virus. It, you know, equated it to the seasonal flu, said it would go away. It was no big deal. And then by that time, you know, it was already well embedded in our country. And closing down flights from China or flights from Europe were too little too late. And he says that saved, you know, hundreds of millions of lives. Well, it's cost. His mishandling of this has already cost 140,000 lives, and it's going to tragically be many more.
It seems like America is one of the few countries where the country doesn't have a rule about wearing masks, whereas overseas, you get like the UK, you get South Africa, you get so many countries where they've gone, hey, we don't care about your personal opinions on this. Just like wearing clothes, you have to wear a mask for now, and it's as simple as that. Do you think the federal government should have more of a global message in and around masks?
Absolutely. I mean, it's ridiculous that we've allowed small pieces of cotton to be, you know, this incredibly divisive thing. We don't mind wearing shirts and pants in public. Why do we have to mind wearing masks in public? If it's going to protect ourselves and our loved ones and those in our community. If Donald Trump had from early on said, look, you know, I recognize that, you know, it may be a little bit uncomfortable or inconvenient, but when you're out in public, do as I do, wear a mask, keep your loved ones and yourself safe, keep your city safe. It'll make a huge difference. It'll enable us to bend this curve, keep it down, and get our businesses back up and running, people back to their jobs, kids back to their schools. I don't think we would have had this political reaction to the extent that we have today.
How do you view the situation in Portland right now? Because that has thrown many Americans off kilter, you know? Federal officers coming in unmarked cars, in unmarked uniforms, grabbing people off the streets, throwing them into vans, apprehending them. People feeling like it feels less like a free country and more like an authoritarian regime, you know, for some of the people who are on the ground there. When you look at what's happening, I mean, there's always a balance between federal response and letting the states handle it or the cities themselves. But how do you view what's happening in Portland right now? Do you think that it's a required use of force or federal assistance, or do you think that something has gone off the rails?
No, it's an abuse of power by President Trump, and it's a purely politically motivated abuse of power. He's sagging in the polls. He thinks the only way to rally his base is through racism and, you know, touting law and order. He is sending federal forces out on the streets without markings, without insignia, without legal authority to do so. And he's rounding up people as if we were, you know, in Belarus or something. It's ridiculous. And, you know, it has nothing to do with their stated mandate of protecting federal buildings and installations. They're now out literally beating the crap out of peaceful protesters and trying to incite more violence so that they have an excuse to use more force. But here he's now pushing the envelope in Portland and threatening to do it elsewhere. And I think Americans need to be on high alert. This is an abuse of power. It's corruption. It's autocracy on our own shores.
There's no denying that your name has come up repeatedly in and around the conversation of vice president. Would you want to serve in the Biden administration? Would you want to serve as a VP?
Well, Trevor, what I want is for Joe Biden to be elected the next president of the United States. I want us to win the Senate and keep the House so that we have the opportunity to put our country back on course and to unite the country and to deal with the damage that's been done, but also to take this opportunity and move forward, improve healthcare, improve education, deal with our underlying disparities. And if I can help in any way, you know, whether it's at the highest levels or some other way, to be part of helping him get elected and to govern if and when he does, then that's what I want to do. And if, you know, if that's not what he chooses for me, that's fine as well. I will do everything I can regardless, because of all that we've just talked about, so much is at stake. We have got to move this country in a different and better direction. And so I'll do anything I can, whether it's the modern day equivalent of licking envelopes or it's, you know, standing by his side.
Well, as you say, I hope America gets back on track. I hope people find a way to depoliticize those little pieces of cotton, and hopefully your words will become prescient when we chat again in a few months. Ambassador Rice, thank you so much for joining us on the Daily Social Distancing Show.
Thanks, Trevor. Great to be with you.
After the break, I'll be speaking to Natalie Emmanuel. You don't want to miss it.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Hi, I'm David Axelrod, CNN senior political commentator, former senior advisor to President Obama, and host of the Axe Files podcast. Join me each week as I interview key figures shaping our world from politics to the arts to sports and beyond. Listen on your favorite podcast app or ask your smart speaker to play The Axe Files with David Axelrod.
Welcome back to the Daily Social Distancing Show. Earlier today, I spoke with Natalie Emmanuel, and we spoke about the Black Lives Matter movement in Britain. We also spoke about her new series, Die Hard, which is available right now on Quibi.
Now, in this lesson, we're going to focus and explore the action star's motivations. Agent King, what is your motivation?
After working undercover in Paris, I go down to the basement of the Louvre where I thwart the theft of an ancient Egyptian artifact when I'm accosted by a rogue agent.
Good. Agent Hart?
Accost. That's a little strong, isn't it?
What the? Focus. Focus.
Natalie Emmanuel, welcome to the Daily Social Distancing Show.
Hi. This is so cool. I feel excited to be on the show, even though, you know, it's virtually.
Congratulations on the new Quibi show, which is, I mean, getting rave reviews and honestly, my favorite Quibi show. I know it's a really short format and people are trying to figure out how to make a show in such a short format, but you on the show with Kevin Hart, it's called Die Hard, and it's honestly one of the funniest and action-packed shows I've ever seen, regardless of the platform.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I think for the short form, format that they have created, I think the show so wonderfully like just keeps you on a like cliffhanger at the end of every episode, and you're like, how have they done this? Like, it's a short episode, but I want to click the next one. And I think they've done such a great job with it, and it was just such a joy to work on. It was, if you find the show funny, like, it's safe to say that we laughed a lot when we were making it as well.
Right. It's also a cool departure for us to see you in, because, I mean, you know, we've seen you in action movies like Fast and the Furious, and then we've seen you in like really dramatic roles. I mean, most famously Game of Thrones. And so like to see you in a comedy where you don't take yourself seriously, but in the show you're trying to take yourself seriously, is a fun world to be in. You've got Kevin Hart, who's always hilarious. And then you've got John Travolta, who just like comes in with this gravitas and hilarity. Like, he just comes in with hilarity on screen that you don't expect. What was it like working with the three of you together in the space doing something completely new?
Well, first of all, for me, I was kind of pinching myself the whole time because I'm standing with Kevin Hart and John Travolta, like, what? So that was pretty exciting for me. But to be honest, the three of us together, we had such great chemistry and we had so much fun together. And Kevin is just so, he has so much energy and keeps the laughs all the time just to keep the energy up. You know how being on set and long days and it's cold and damp and you're like, oh, but like he's always so like ready to go. And he was so funny and his genius. And then working with John, I mean, he's like funny in a whole other way, but it's so brilliant. And it was just so amazing to watch him work, and his range is insane. And then
definitely
all these ideas out, and just like, you know, it's incredible to watch. And I had so much fun, and we like I said before, we just laughed so much and had a really great time together.
You were also one of the first people I saw in the UK who were, you know, part of the Black Lives Matter movement, like on the ground. I mean, I know, you know, in America we saw this movement, but once it spread around the globe, I remember, you know, seeing you talking about it, and you were unabashed about it. You weren't afraid to share your thoughts on what needs to change, not just in society, but on screen. You know, a lot of people talk about how you were the only woman of color on Game of Thrones as a leading character, or as a character, you know, spoken word character. And it must be an interesting position to be in. But tell me why you've gotten so involved in this and what you hope to achieve in your industry and hopefully in society at large.
Well, I think it's a matter of humanity at this point. You know, like, I'm just like everyone, I'm just sick of seeing people dying. And I realized that I have a platform and I have an audience. And if I can speak out about these things, spread information, share my own experiences, and maybe make a difference in some way, then that's the only way that's all I can do. And, you know, when it comes to the entertainment industry, I think that we've made some really important leaps and important changes, but there's still a lot of work to do. And I think part of this moment and this movement has resulted in people having the conversations about how many Black creatives we are hiring at every level of production, because it's so easy to sort of do the like, oh, well, we've got a really diverse, inclusive cast in front of the camera, and then every level behind the camera isn't really reflective of the world that we live in. And I think that is where we keep falling into these kind of stereotypes and tropes of these kind of negative depictions of minorities, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that for me is the goal, is to sort of spark conversation about the stories and the voices that are in the room, not just in front of the camera. And I have real ambition to make that change. When I'm lucky enough to start producing and making my own things, that I have that that's just a part of my desire, is to hire as inclusively as possible, whether it be gender, race, you know, just everyone. Like,
well, like you say, the first step is beginning with the conversations, having the intention, and then hopefully creating something where everyone has some equity that represents society at large. So thank you for sharing that, and thank you for coming on the show. And thank you for staying healthy. And hopefully we'll see you again, not through a lens.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Have a good one, Natalie.
Bye.
Thank you so much, Natalie. Well, that's our show for tonight. But before we go, America is facing a nationwide poll shortage right now. And it's because most poll workers are over 60. And with COVID still in the air, they are understandably not showing up. But the thing is, fewer poll workers means fewer polling stations are going to be open, and it means that there's going to be longer lines that not everybody can afford to stay and wait in, especially in communities of color. The good news is, though, most poll working is paid, and in some states, you can be as young as 16 to do it. So, if you're interested and you have the time, this is your chance to save granny, protect democracy, and get some of that money too.
The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Ears Edition. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central and the Comedy Central app. Watch full episodes and videos at thedailyshow.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And subscribe to The Daily Show on YouTube for exclusive content and more.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Are you ready for an all-new season of Survivor? You better be, because Survivor 46 is here, and it's 90 minutes of twists and turns you don't want to miss. Better yet, after each episode, there's a brand new episode of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Each week, we go behind the scenes of the episode's biggest moments, taking you into the how and the why things happened. And this season, we're very lucky to be joined by an expert, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
What is up? I'm thrilled to be joining this team and to be giving you my take on how and the why players made the moves they did, what it takes to outwit, outplay, and outlast, and to ask Jeff some questions, because even after 26 days out there, there is still a lot for me to uncover.
Bring it, D. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.